All right. You're a natural born citizen of the U.S.
Yeah.
Are there any individuals that you might recommend as in future interviewees in light of my subject?
Well, I mentioned Frank Gehly.
Yeah.
Who's writing a great deal on the history, including a lot about my role in ecology.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would be certainly one that would be familiar with it. I guess I've outlived a lot of them. I don't, offhand, don't think of anyone else.
Okay, right, well, that's good.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get on with the rest of the questions.
Sure.
First question is, where did you receive your education, and then primarily who did you study under?
Yeah. Bachelor's degree at the University of North Carolina, I think I mentioned that. Master's degree also at the University of North Carolina. That's, that was, South was still in depressions in the late 30s, and
mm-hmm.
so it was easy and cheap for me to stay home. Then the PhD, went to Illinois, and there the great ecologists of the day was Kendi and Shelford, B. E. Shelford, S-H-E-L-F-O-R-D, who was pioneer animal ecologist, but also a person who put the community level at the top. He was the one that invented the term biome, which is used. And then Charles Kendi, K-E-N-D-I-G-H, was a well-known ecologist. I was actually worked under Kendi as my major professor.
Okay.
And they're both deceased now.
Any major professor at Chapel Hill?
That one that probably influenced more is R. E. Coker, Robert E. Coker.
Okay.
C-O-K-E-R. He was a limnologist.
Mm-hmm. Famous.
His son was one of my best friends. Yeah.
Okay. What got you interested in ecology?
Well, it came from an early interest in birds. So I came in from the part to go to the whole. And I soon realized, you see, that to understand and deal with birds, you need to know something about the bird's habitat. So
mm-hmm.
you go from the bird to the habitat. And then in the early days, ecology was mostly descriptive. Even in Illinois, it was
mm-hmm.
still descriptive. And then we went from function. We got description to function, how these work,
mm-hmm.
how the systems work. And there you almost have to be considered the system. You can't much talk about the function of a single species.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about its niche and its role that it may play in a food chain or something. But to study food chains and larger and ecosystems, you mainly have to shift to the functional level. And so this is where people like G. E. Hutchinson at Yale, and my brother at that time, his younger brother, was a student of Hutchinson. And so we used to interact a lot, and when he was taking Hutchinson's course, he would send me his notes and things. So that the influence, we might say, of the new breed of people at that time, Yale was a place for that. You had Gordon Riley, and you had Edward Deavy, and you had G. Hutchinson, all of them were pioneering in what we would now call ecosystem function. And the early holistic concepts came pretty much from the aquatic side. Terrestrial people are slow because there's so many big, impressive animals,
mm-hmm.
and trees,
mm-hmm.
and plants, that limnology, you can't see very much in a lake, so you have to turn to function. So that the aquatic ecologists pioneered a lot of the concepts that we now recognize as universal. So that was one of the first things in my book, what's common between all systems. That's
mm-hmm.
what's ecological, but not what plant ecologists do or animal ecologists do, but what is the common denominator
mm-hmm.
between that. And you come down, of course, at energy. One of them. So you base your ecology then on energetics and as well as evolutionary biology. So you have those two bases that make up for an integrated science.
Okay. What's your brother's name?
Brother's name is Howard T. Odom, H.T., he calls himself. So we go we go by initials. We have H.T., and I'm E.P. My son, who we lost to cancer recently, is also a well-known ecologist, and he's W.E. William E. And then my father's H.W., and so on. That turned out.
All right. Our next question is, I've already answered this one, but how long have you been in the field of ecology?
All my life, I guess, pretty much, since certainly since high school. I used to get up early in the morning and go out and look at birds and so on. I spent so much time on that in school and in college that some of my grades suffered. And, wasn't interested enough, you know, to put time in it. That came back to haunt me in graduate school because several times I missed out on fellowships because I didn't. They looked, hey, a guy made a C here. And we call that the gentleman's grade, you know, it turns the circle. And so I had to take teaching jobs or something. I had to work a little bit more. I never, in those days, I didn't get any fellowships because I didn't have the grade. Fortunately, we didn't have a GREs and all that. Yeah. So it was easier to get in.
Right, you're lucky, lucky man.
So, but it was a matter of attention. So, I've taught in, just an example, I taught ornithology a number of times here, but I never had a course in it. Mm-hmm. And something like that you don't learn from a course. I mean, it's something that you can, if you're going to be a good field ornithologist and know all the bird songs, you can't deal with birds without knowing their songs and calls because you can't see them half the time. So that the result is self-study. And we emphasize that person should not just depend on taking a course in this and taking a course in that, but if he's really interested in it, he ought to be working on it all the time or self-study and so on. So that much of my earlier work was self-study. Wasn't until we got to Illinois, really, that you begin to look at principles and ideas and think about things. So in those days, you didn't major in ecology because there was no such thing. Major in biology, and in the case of Illinois, there was a considerable emphasis on ecology. Not many schools had that, probably about half a dozen. And nowhere in the South, you see, was any place that you could go to study anything like that. And now, so we're happy that people come here now, you see, that we have a much better ecology program than the University of Illinois at this time, because they've gone downhill and lost their leadership because they've stayed in biology. Mm-hmm. If you stay in biology, then you're not going to be top dog, you see, because when you're in biology, you're a third or fourth rate down the scale, you see. Some other subjects, genetics, molecular biology, are much more important, you see. So you have to establish, you see, as a discipline on its own, which is what we have done here mostly. Mostly because what you do is get put down, like I got a senior fellowship from NSF to go study atomic energy because we thought the atomic age was right around the corner. That was in 55. And so I learned something about this. I took a year off. And so I thought I had agreement with the university deans and the head of the department to bring in somebody else here while I was gone and use my salary because I was leaving the salary here because the NSF pays you entire expenses and salary. They didn't do that. And so they welched on me. So I said, all right, it's obvious they don't want more than one ecologist in a small department. They said, well, one's enough, you know, we need something else. You know, we need a comparative anatomist or we need a histologist or we need something. So I said, well, if you're going to have any kind of team, we got to have to form our own setup. So that's what we did. Sapelo and Savannah River enabled us to hire a lot of people and bring a lot of students in that we wouldn't have been able to do, you see, if we stayed small.
Yeah.
So in some, what I tell people when you get put out, don't fuss about that. Just use that as a stimulus. Mm-hmm. My father would say he's a football fan. Say if you can't run through the middle of the line, run around the end. I'll pass it. Right. So that's the message we get. So, and the same thing with the book. The publisher said, there's no market for this book. I said, well, there ought to be. Let's create a market. Let's put out a book and I think the market will come, mm-hmm. which it did. So that these are cases where you react to barriers or put downs, you know, by doing something to go around or to promote it in some other way. Mm-hmm. So the message is, you know, sometimes it's good for you to have you put down, or if you fail a course, that's sometimes
you get you going,
maybe in the wrong place or something.
Yeah. Yeah, good. So just to summarize that question, you've been actively been an ecologist for about 60 years.
I guess as far as back as you can go. I was shy, and I like to go out in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't, at that point, it never occurred to me that I'd be a professor because I was so shy that I ended up getting up before people and talking. You change. Kids always, I think, naturally want to do something different from their fathers, so mm-hmm. the thought of being a professor was far from my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But then to follow my interests, you see, and eventually get teaching fellowship, you see that's not so hard. Bad. So the teacher thrives if he has enthusiasm, as you know from your own. The teachers that you remember, not necessarily the ones that know the most about the subject, but the ones that had enthusiasm.
Right, most energy.
And communicated that to you. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do.
Okay. Well, let's go to the next question, which is, what changes in environmental thought of the general public have occurred during your lifetime?
Well, I think we talked earlier. The big change came in 1969, 1970,
mm-hmm.
when the astronauts went to the moon and took pictures back to Earth. And other things, there was the first Earth Day, you know,
mm-hmm.
in 1970. We got involved in a big way with the politics of preservation of coastal marshes because of Sapelo. And we had about 15 years at that time of study of the marsh, so we were able to suggest how important these were because we found out a lot of interesting things about them, their productivity and their role as nursery grounds and so on. And so we were able to convince people that these are worth preserving, whereas most people consider wastelands, you know, mm-hmm. just fill them up, you know, build something. And so having 15 years of basic work before anybody even worried about the marshes, nobody didn't even bother about them until people started to come to the coast, you see,
mm-hmm.
and nobody living down there much in those days. And so we forced it in being ahead of the game, not having to rush out and do a lot of research. And then one of our major papers was the economic value of the marshes, what we call shadow prices, in which we used the energy approach to evaluate the worth of the marsh on the basis of the work being done there, and so gross productivity. Turn that into dollars, because energy and dollars have a relationship. So the paper we published with an economist and the LSU postdoc who was here, the three of us, called The Value of the Tidal Marsh, was one of the milestones.
And what journal did that appear in?
That appeared as a bulletin published by LSU. It's out of print, been out of print for a long time.
All right.
But that created a great storm among the economists. They wrote articles saying there's no way to value things. This is dumb. Economic value depends on what people will pay, you know, and all that. And so then we had rebuttals in the little journal of coastal management. We had back and forth argument, criticism by the economists, rebuttal, then a rebuttal by them, then a rebuttal by us. My brother got involved in this too. So we had a whole series of little discussions mm-hmm. at that time. That was our first time. That's way back in the 70s. So 70 was a turn. Big turn, as people in general throughout the world became aware that the environment was there and important, and it was being misused in many cases, and my book prices shot up like mad. It was sell 5,000 copies, and then the next year it was 50,000 copies. Mm. And so I used that money to buy land around here. So I'm a land poor millionaire. Okay, so you could see that in demand for books. I mean, you could plot to that sort of thing. So that, and then I think the IBP, which came along, the National Biological Program, which was essentially a watershed ecosystem level approach to be promoted. See, originally they had separate committees, they called it, for study of terrestrial, and separate one for study of freshwater, and a separate one for study of ocean, you see, and separate one for study of humans. And so we said, that's nonsense. Let's get them together. We didn't get all those together, but we got